turn to Book of John, chapter 18. Book of John, chapter 18. We'll read the first 8 verses. When Jesus had spoken these words, he went forth with his disciples over the brook Kidron, where was a garden, into the which he entered and his disciples. And Judas also, which betrayed him, knew the place, for Jesus oftentimes resorted thither with his disciples. Judas then, having received a band of men and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, cometh thither with lanterns and torches and weapons. Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth and said unto them, Whom seek ye? They answered him, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus said unto them, I am. And Judas also, which betrayed him, stood with them. As soon then as he had said unto them, I am, they went backward and fell to the ground. Then asked he them again, Whom seek ye? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus answered, I have told you that I am. If therefore you seek me, let these, pointing to the disciples, go their way. I want to take the main thought of the message from verse 4. Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth. And also what transpired there in verse 8, when Jesus said, If therefore you seek me, let these go their way. These verses reveal the wonderful truth that Christ voluntarily, willingly submitted himself to arrest and ultimately to the death of the cross. That truth is very heartening to the hearts of God's people, that Christ voluntarily and willingly offered himself is something that ought to motivate us, inspire us, and stir us in the service of the Lord. That the Lord readily, intentionally, and deliberately submitted himself to arrest and ultimately death manifests a love that passes knowledge, a love that is beyond human comprehension. That Christ voluntarily and willingly offered himself as a truth that ought to have tremendous influence, tremendous sway in our lives. It is a truth that ought to govern our lives and transform everything about us. I want to speak tonight on the subject of the crucifixion was not an object of apprehension to Christ. By apprehension, we mean dread. Christ never, not for one second, dreaded the cross. By apprehension, we mean fear and panic. Christ never feared the cross. Christ never went into a state of panic concerning the cross or anything else as far as that goes. Much of so-called Christendom view and portray the cross and what transpired there as some sort of tragedy. If you look up the word tragedy, it means a disaster. The cross was no disaster. It means a misfortune. The cross was not a misfortune. It means a calamity, a catastrophe. Something that has a sorrowful and disastrous conclusion. None of that is true concerning the crucifixion, concerning the cross. And to view the crucifixion of Christ in such a way is ignorance. And it is highly erroneous. From this message, we want to plainly see that Christ never viewed his crucifixion in such a way. We want to see Christ's view and attitude toward the cross. In so doing, we will read several scriptures tonight, some of them more than once, emphasizing different points from the same scriptures. But the first thing that we need to recognize is that Jesus Christ was not ignorant of the cross. He was not ignorant of what the cross entailed. Christ, in that body of flesh that the Father prepared for him, in that body of flesh, Christ was God. And as God, he was omniscient. He was all-knowing. Being God, he knew and fully understood what the Scripture said concerning his own crucifixion. He was fully aware. Christ understood and fully comprehended the fact that he would be crucified upon a cross. In Matthew chapter 20, if we turn there, Matthew 20, verse 28. Again, each of these verses that we're about to read show that Christ understood and comprehended the fact that he would be crucified. Matthew 20, verse 28. Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life a ransom for many. To give his life was not taken from him. He laid it down. To give his life a ransom for many. John chapter 3. John chapter 3. Verse 14. And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up. Speaking of the cross. John chapter 8, verse 28. Then said Jesus unto them, when ye have lifted up the Son of Man, he's talking about his crucifixion, then shall ye know that I am, and that I do nothing of myself, but as my Father hath taught me, I speak these things. John chapter 10, Verse 11. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life. Again, a good shepherd giveth his life, and he does so for the sheep. Verse 15. As the Father knoweth me, even so know I the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. Verse 17 and verse 18. Therefore doth my Father love me, because I lay down my life, that I may take it again. No man taketh it from me. See, he understood. No man taketh it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it again. This commandment, to lay down my life and to take it up again, have I received of my Father. Then notice in John chapter 12, verse 32 and verse 33. And if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all unto me. He's speaking of the crucifixion. Verse 33 makes this plain. This said he, signifying what death he should die. What death he should die. Each of these verses reveal that Christ fully comprehended, that Christ fully understood, that he fully knew the fact that he would lay down his life upon a cross. Christ also understood and comprehended, I believe, the details and the particulars of the crucifixion. He knew everything that it entailed. Matthew chapter 16, verse 21. Matthew 16, verse 21. From that time forth began Jesus to show unto his disciples how that he must go into Jerusalem and suffer. How he must go into Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and the chief priests and scribes, and be killed. He is showing these things to the disciples because he knew, and that he should be raised again the third day. Speaking of the details and the particulars, Jesus knew of Judas's betrayal, which would lead to the crucifixion. Notice in John chapter 13. John chapter 13. And we'll read verse 18. I speak not of you all, speaking to us, the 12. I know whom I have chosen, but the scripture may be fulfilled. He that eateth bread with me hath lifted up his heel against me. John chapter 17 and verse 12. Jesus is praying. While I was with them in the world, I kept them in thy name. Those that thou gavest me I have kept, and none of them is lost but the son of perdition, Now, Judas has not yet betrayed him. That the scripture might be fulfilled. He showed the disciples how he would suffer, how he would be killed. He spoke to the apostles concerning the betrayal of Judas. He was also fully aware that the apostles would scatter and leave him. John 16, verse 32. He's speaking to the apostles. He said, "The hour cometh, yea, is now come." He knew his time. He knew the time was here. "That ye shall be scattered, every man to his own, and shall leave me alone. And yet I am not alone, because the Father is with me." He knew all about all of these things. Notice in Matthew 26 what transpired, and we read the same thing in our text, but what transpired when they came to arrest Jesus Christ. In verse 50, "And Jesus said unto him, Friend, wherefore art thou come? Then came they and laid hands on Jesus and took him." Now in John chapter 18, Jesus asked them, "Whom seek ye?" They said, "Jesus of Nazareth." He said, "I am." He could have escaped if that's what he was looking to do. They didn't even know who he was. He said, "I am." As soon as he revealed himself, I believe there was a display of his glory, and they fell backwards. They were helpless. And were he looking for a way to escape? Certainly he could have. Then while they're on the ground, he asked them again, "Who'd you say you were looking for?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." And he said, "I am." He was not looking to escape. Matthew 26, verse 51. After they lay hands on Jesus and took him, this would have been after what we read just referred to in John 18. "Behold, one of them which were with Jesus stretched out his hand and drew his sword and struck a servant of the high priest and smote off his ear. Then said Jesus unto him, Put up again thy sword into his place, for all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword. Thinkest thou that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels?" Jesus had the power to do so. But he did not have the authority to do so. There is a sense in which Jesus could not call forth 12 legions of angels. Because to do that, they would have delivered him from the cross. Jesus is basically saying, "I am going willingly and voluntarily. I have the power to call legions of angels. But I'm not going to do that, because for this hour came I into the world." Verse 54. "But how then shall the scriptures be fulfilled?" That is, if I were to call 12 legions of angels, how then shall the scriptures be fulfilled? That thus it must be. Again, he states that he was aware of what the scripture said concerning his crucifixion. This is also manifested while he was upon the cross. Notice in John 19, in verse 28. And Jesus, knowing that all things were now accomplished, that the Scripture might be fulfilled, saith, I thirst. He knew exactly when to say, I thirst. He knew exactly, he knew every detail. He knew every particular of that cross. Christ also understood and comprehended the purpose of his crucifixion. Again, we'll turn to Matthew 20, verse 28. Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life. And then notice what it says. A ransom for. He knew that his death was for a people. He referred to those people here as many. John chapter 10, he referred to them as the sheep, which is equivalent to the elect of God. A ransom for. He knew that the crucifixion was the payment for the release of others. So he knew that his death was substitutionary. He also knew for whom he would be crucified. And I believe that he knew each and every one by name for whom he would be crucified. Again, John 10, 11, and 15. He would voluntarily and willingly lay down his life for the sheep. Now, sheep is somewhat of a general term, but Christ knew the particulars of each and every one of his sheep. John chapter 17, we'll not turn there, but in his prayer, just prior to his arrest, he was very, very cognizant of those whom the Father had given him. He prayed over and over, and he referred over and over to those whom the Father has given me. He knew that his death was substitutionary for all of those whom the Father had given him. And he knew each and every one that the Father had given him. Christ not only knew what the crucifixion entailed, he viewed it as a work that had been given to him to accomplish. Again, God the Father prepared a body for Jesus Christ. He prepared that body with a very definite purpose, a very definite design. Everything God does, he does with purpose and design. And Jesus Christ, God himself, voluntarily and willingly took upon himself that God-prepared body. And in that body, he came to this earth to do the work that the Father had sent him to do. He had a definite work to accomplish. And don't you believe that he was fully aware of everything that work entailed? Fully aware. Jesus said to Joseph and Mary in Luke 2, verse 49, remember they lost him. He said, I must be about my Father's business. Now his Father's business entails many things. One of the things it entails is the cross. He told the apostles in John 4 and verse 34, "My meat is to do the will of him that sent me and to finish his work." And again to the apostles in John 9 and verse 4, he said, "I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day." The chief work of Christ was what? To save his people from their sins. That is why he was called Jesus. Involved in this work of saving his people from their sins was the crucifixion. And it is referred to in the book of John as his hour. His hour. Notice in John chapter 7 and verse 30. John 7, verse 30. "Then they sought to take him, but no man laid hands on him." They wanted to, but they couldn't. They didn't know why they couldn't, but they couldn't. And the reason they couldn't is because his hour was not yet come. John chapter 8, verse 20. "These words spake Jesus in the treasury as he taught in the temple, and no man laid hands on him." All they wanted to. For his hour was not yet come. And then we come to John 13. John 13 and verse 1. "Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come," the hour of which he came into this world to lay down his life, he viewed the cross as a work. The very word "work" speaks of a purpose. He knew the purpose of the cross. He knew the purpose of the crucifixion. And he did not view it with apprehension. He viewed it as something he must accomplish, something he must do. And I believe that all through the Old Testament, you see the trail of Satan trying to prevent Jesus Christ from coming into this world. And then when Jesus Christ was born, you see the trail of the serpent again. And now he is doing everything to keep Christ from going to that cross. He put it in Herod's heart to kill all the infants. They would take up stones to stone him. Satan would do everything to destroy Christ before he could go to the cross. Christ was fully aware that it was for this hour that he came into the earth. Not only was Christ never apprehensive about the cross, I believe that Christ had an eager anticipation as he viewed the cross. He was eager. He came to do the Father's will. The Father's will is that he lay down his life. Christ, knowing what the cross entailed, fully knowing its purpose, and knowing for whom he would be crucified, He not only did not fear, he did not dread the cross, he had an eager anticipation of the cross. I believe that everything that we have heard Christ say up to this point concerning the cross was said with a tone and attitude of eager anticipation. Again, John 13, verse 1, Jesus knew that his hour was come. And though the apostles were filled with gloom and fear, read John 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17. The apostles were filled with gloom and fear. But as you read those chapters, it is very, very, very obvious that he was not. He was not filled with gloom as the hour was approaching. He was not filled with fear as the hour was approaching. No, he spoke words of encouragement to them in John chapter 14. And when Jesus and the apostles went out of that upper room, notice John 14 verse 31, that the world may know that I love the Father, and as the Father gave me commandment, referring to that work, even so I do. Arise. Let us go hence. And as they left that upper room, John 15 and 16, Jesus continued to speak words of encouragement to them. And then eventually, they came to that garden, John chapter 17. And he lifted up his eyes to heaven and said, Father, the hour has come. Now when Jesus said that, Father, the hour has come, I don't believe he said that with fear. I don't believe he said that with any sense of dread. I believe he said it with excitement and eager anticipation. The hour has come. It's here. This is for what he came into this world for. To do the Father's work. So in those words I hear a tone of eager anticipation. And as I hear him pray in John chapter 17, I see an attitude of eager anticipation. Following this prayer, we read in Matthew 26 and 36. Well, let's turn to Matthew 26. We read there in verse 36, then cometh Jesus with them unto a place called Gethsemane. A place called Gethsemane. This morning we read about a place called Golgotha, which of course came after Gethsemane. Most of God's people have no understanding of Golgotha. And even greater, fewer have understanding concerning what happened in this place called Gethsemane. Keep in mind, Jesus has just spoke words of encouragement concerning his hour, concerning the fact that he was going away. He has prayed. And now he comes into a place called Gethsemane. he went into that place, did he not know what would transpire there? Did he not know? He's God. Did he not know that this was a part of the work that the Father had given him to do? And he voluntarily and he willingly, out of love for his people, went into that place called Gethsemane. And I believe that in Gethsemane that Christ came near to death. Humanly speaking, I believe that Jesus Christ almost died in Gethsemane, which would have been a victory for Satan. We read in Matthew 26 and verse 38, Jesus said to Peter, James, and John, "My soul is exceeding sorrowful, even unto death." And three times he prayed, "Let this cup pass from me." Verse 39, he went a little further and fell on his face and prayed, saying, "O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me." Verse 42, he went away again a second time and prayed, saying, "O my Father, if this cup may not pass away from me except I drink it, thy will be done." Verse 44, and he left them and went away again, and he prayed the third time, saying the same words. This cup, first of all, keep this in mind. Every prayer that Jesus prayed was answered. Because every prayer that Jesus prayed was in the will of the Father. Now, if you believe anything different, you're on dangerous ground. To say that he did not pray in the will of the Father, he would have to cease to be God. He always prayed in the will of the Father. And his prayers were always answered. He prays here three times, "Let this cup pass from me." This cup does not refer to the cross. It is sickening. When almost all of Christendom believes that Jesus is praying, "Somehow, Lord, let me get out of the cross." I don't believe that for a second. And if that be so, that prayer wasn't answered, because he went to the cross. But this cup refers to what he was experiencing at that very moment in Gethsemane. He was not looking to avoid the cross. I believe he was praying that his life would be spared. He was about to die in Gethsemane. He was in a battle. And he prayed, not trying to avoid the cross, but trying to get to the cross. "Father, let this cup pass from me." We know that the angels came and strengthened him. Notice verse 45 and 6. "Then cometh he to his disciples and saith unto them, Sleep on now and take your rest." And then notice what he says. Behold, the hour is at hand. He's been refreshed. His prayer's been answered. This cup, what he was experiencing in Gethsemane, has been taken away. And the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. He's anticipating eagerly his arrest and ultimately his death. He is at hand that doth betray me. And this is where our text picks up. There in John 18 and verse 4. Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth. He met that band of men. He voluntarily, he willingly, and with a heart filled with love for me, submitted himself to be arrested and tried and eventually led to a place called Golgotha. He did all of this without any apprehension whatsoever, but rather with eager anticipation. And he did so all along. His sheep were upon his mind. That means all along, I was upon his mind. The cross is not some unfortunate event. It is the plan and purpose of God. And Jesus Christ came willingly and voluntarily and went there with eager anticipation. And he did so for me. Again, that ought to inspire us. How can we be hesitant? How can we dread? How can we be apprehensive toward doing His will when He so willingly gave all for you and I? Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in a verse of song. Let's all stand. Brother Larry will lead us in singing.